Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, no thanks, Jackson Jacks. I'm Tamara Ricky on the board. SB Futures down 14. NASDAQ Futures down 58. This is after 3 days in a row. Really skyrocketing market. So maybe we're due for a little bit of a pause, or maybe it'll just be maybe we'll head right up as soon as we open. Who the hell knows? It's been pretty strong. A lot of interesting stuff happening with, you know, all of a sudden everybody's kumbaya. The chairman of the Fed and the president and Chinese, everybody's all get together here. We're not sure exactly how that's working out, but let's just say I sure wish I was on the inside. I'd be making some dough. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
Are you you getting the memos from Washington and trading your spoos appropriately?
You know, they probably sent them to my home, but I'm sitting in Indianapolis this morning, so.
What the hate it when that happens? You're going to get there and it's stale. What could be worse than stale front-running news?
Oh, I'd probably come up with a few things.
What'd you think of the
White Sox baseball?
Yeah, what did you think of the? I was out of all the schmoes in the bar the other night, talking about the various first round pick. I had spotted one article a while ago talking about how the new Bears head coach loved to play a two tight end set, and they love Cole Kmet from Notre Dame, and they were looking for another difference maker, and I was absolutely correct on that with all these sports bluffs, because I'm usually not. Those guys are usually aren't. But I picked the wrong guy. I thought they'd pick the guy from Penn State. I saw him play in the playoffs. I thought he was the best player in the field. But this guy, Michigan, is he? I don't remember him at all. Is he?
Yeah, he's rated comparably. He's a little bit younger, might be a little bit faster, and was playing with a far crappier quarterback last year.
Yeah, I thought the kid on Penn State, he could block, but he was out there like a wide receiver, and he could. Anyway, I mean, I guess it was kind of a toss-up.
They're both very highly rated, so, you know, almost like right next to each other in terms of their rating scores. So I don't think you could, you probably can't go wrong with either one of them. I don't know that the Bears would have drafted a tight end if one of the tackles fell to them, but the tackles all got taken.
Who gets the job of buying these guys their suits? Is that why Lou stopped becoming an agent, because he didn't want to buy? The one guy had the green stripe, the tackle, and then the one guy had the absolutely buried battery-powered pink. Do the agents have to buy that crap for these guys so they can run out there and look like idiots?
Yeah, I think they actually do. In fact, you sign with an agent, they line you up with a personal trainer, with nutritionists, you know, all that kind of stuff as you go through the draft evaluation. And, yeah, I'm sure they dress them up, too.
Now, the agents have to come up with that money, and the guys are making it in college, or can they pay for it themselves? You would think they could pay for it.
Maybe, you know, a lot has changed. So I am sure, you know, you could easily go tell the guy who made $1 million in college last year that he can afford his own damn suit. But then again, there's the lower, the lower round guys, the guys from the smaller schools, they sign with agents too. And I'm sure the agents dress them up. But since they don't have to be at the draft itself, right? You at least save on the suit, but you're still hiring nutritionists and trainers.
My elves, my guys, my said that this is it didn't really work out this way. Said that there were three people in the draft that were far and head and shoulders above everybody else, and then there were everybody else was the next like 30 people were like really good players that all were somewhat the same depending on what position you needed. Sort of like the year to. The Bears had the fourth pick and didn't do anything with it, and they ended up with Curtis Enos after three really studs went before him. And he was just okay. I mean, what I'm saying, he was good, but these guys claim this one. So they thought the kid from Colorado is special. It's Travis Hunter. The guy played both ways. They thought the one edge rusher from is at the
He wasn't it. I'm looking at the grades that they had for all the prospects on NFL.com. Ashton Gentry, the running back, was the highest rated player. Abdul Carter from Penn State. Yeah, you're right. The edge. I'm sorry, I missed it. He was an edge rusher. He was the second rated one. Travis Hunter from Colorado was the third.
Yeah, those were the three.
The fourth and fifth were the two tight ends. Tyler Warren from Penn State and Colson Loveland from Michigan. So, you know, you were tossing a coin at that point. After those two, then it does start to drop off. You know, guys still have high grades, but it does drop off significantly after that. So, you know, you drop a little, drop a little, drop a little, and then you get past those two tight ends, and then you drop a little bit more.
Well,
getting either of the tight ends at the 10th pick, if you believe these grading systems, was a bargain.
There used to be, you know, boy, I can't even go back how long this was. The grading system now, of course, is so much more sophisticated. Of course, you know, everything's more sophisticated. But I seem to recall a time when every year there was a, I think if you were a one, which very few people were, I think Wilbur Marshall might have been rated that high for the Bears linebacker a few years ago. Oh, by the way, we have to toss a thing up. R.I.P. Mongo, huh?
Yeah,
it's a shame. I mean,
well, it's in a way, it's not in that he had ALS, and that's just a debilitating, painful thing. So, in that regard, it's over. You know, the suffering is over. But what a character! What an outstanding player!
Would you, without being harsh, because I like the guy. Is he one of those guys that if he'd have been on another team, he just would have been at that level? You're not just anything. But was he on a scale of 1 to 10 a 7 tackle that if he played for New England in the day, nobody even heard of him from the guy?
Yeah, perhaps. If you looked at the linemen on the Bears, Richard Dent was better. Dan Hampton was better. Then you'd probably get to McMichael.
I'm not so sure that when he was in his prime, the fridge wasn't quite as well. He was the same way. He was pretty dominant.
Well, he was hard to move, but he had his high points and low points.
Yeah,
he was probably only at his best for about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, oh yeah,
he,
yeah.
He ate himself into oblivion.
Well, I mean, Hilgenberg said that. In practice, he could have demolished him every play. He was that good. Anyway, but there, you know, you see this thing in football, and it's team sports are kind of always sort of like that, to a certain extent. You have I don't know that if you look at people from we were young when I used to watch football all the time. I don't know that the guy from Pittsburgh, Jack Lambert, is a Hall of Famer if he doesn't play behind Mean Joe Green. I don't know that Leroy Jordan from Dallas was a Hall of Famer if he didn't play behind Bob Lilly. I don't know who's the guy. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but he got an awful lot of press. The guard on St. Louis, the guy was supposed to be the meanest guy in football. Well, hell, he played next to Dan Dierdorf for 15 years. That makes things pretty easy, right?
It's almost self-evident that if you're not playing with other outstanding players, all they have to do is gang up on you, and it's pretty hard to make an impact.
Yeah, it's you don't
and,
see.
And if you looked at anyone on that Bears defense, because then of course then you throw in, you have Singletary, you have Wilbur Marshall, you have Otis Wilson, and then you have some really really outstanding safeties to go with them. That you know, everybody was making everybody else look good.
Well, and you see what happened. Wilbur Marshall went on to have a different type of career at Washington. He was a standout player there. Then I think he retired from somewhere else. I'm going to say he was the highest graded person in that whole bunch. And maybe he was the best player of all of them, because he played on three teams. He's not even a Hall of Fame. I'm not so sure he wasn't the best of any of them.
Well, I'm thinking about that. You know, it certainly in the Bears scheme, he was perfect for it.
Yeah, I mean, he was the fastest. I mean, I remember the year. Anyway, where I was going with this is they used to grade people. I think it was a five-lat selection, Kevin. And number one was a all-pro your first year, which, of course, most years didn't have anybody like that. And those are your Mean Joe Greens, those are your Dick Butkuses, those are your O.J. Simpsons, those kinds of guys, which you don't find too often, really. You might get an edge rusher, you might get something like that, you might get a wide receiver. And number two was, I think, a starter right away, an eventual all-pro. Number three was a starter somewhere during your first year, maybe your second year, and a solid contributor. And four, there's very few.
Now the way they scale it is a grade of eight, which nobody had, is the perfect prospect. And then you go 7.0 to 7.1 is Pro Bowl talent. That's what you were talking about. And the only guy that has that, the only two are Ashton Gentry and Abdul Carter.
Is that Pro Bowl first year or Pro Bowl ever?
Well, it doesn't say, but I would assume that if it's Pro Bowl talent now, that there's a good chance of making the Pro Bowl. I take it back. This doesn't read top to bottom. It reads left to right and then down. So they have a 7.3 to 7.5, which is perennial All-Pro. And 7.3 to 7.5 is nobody.
Yeah.
In this one. And then you get to Pro Bowl talent, the 7.0 to 7.1. And then the 6.7 to 6.9. is a year one starter, and that is the next set of guys. That's Travis Hunter. That's the two and the two tight ends are graded as year one starters.
And what about the QB? Where do they have him? Was he just up top number one pick because he's the only good QB, or is he that good?
Yeah, no, he's I've seen him play. He's good, but if we were to look at the grading for him. Let's see, where is he? Seeing if I can find him. Just scanning this, I can drop it into. I can drop down the menu for quarterbacks. Give me a sec for that. And QBs, because QB is Cam Ward is the highest rated quarterback, but he's a 6.39 is the grade they gave him, and that would drop him into. Will eventually be a plus starter.
Well, who's the guy they were talking about on the score this morning? I turned the radio on. I had up in the score last night instead of listening to the news for the show. And they had some guy who, I think he's a quarterback. I got it from the conversation that somehow dropped to the second round, and him and his agent are totally outraged. Who are they talking about?
That's Shedeur Sanders, Deion Sanders' son.
Oh, okay. He's a quarterback?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. You know, they said his issues were nobody wanted to deal with his agent, and it had nothing to do with playing quarterback, was their summation.
Well, the way it was laid out, because I saw the report that you're talking about. They said, you know, kind of entitled and they didn't like him. And then the tagline ones, and he's not that good anyway. So, because he was never considered as good as the number one pick, and that's, you know, he's so down on the line on this little view that I'm looking at, Cam Ward, that he's, you know, I'd have to count because they don't have the numbers, but he's on page two, and he's about, you know, seven or eight players down page two here. So he's good. I've seen Cam Ward play. He's good. He's a good football player. But if he's better than Shedeur Sanders, then if you believe the grading system, Shedeur Sanders was not a first round pick.
These guys have Indianapolis Colts with an A taking the kid from Penn State. They said they can't believe that he dropped to 14, and they're ecstatic to get him.
Yeah, I would imagine they are, because you know, even if you like the Michigan tight end better, you would have expected the other tight end to go within the next pick or two after that.
These guys are talking about the Dallas pick, and who's the new coach at Dallas? Brian Schottenheimer, Marty's kid. You gotta love it when they take shots at Jerry Jones. New coach Brian Schottenheimer spoke earlier this month of his belief in building a team outside in, the focus on cornerbacks, wide receivers, defensive ends, offensive tackles. I'm not so sure I agree with that, by the way. But I'm not a pro coach either. But this
we saw it with the Bears last year. Yeah, we saw what outside in looks like.
Yeah, but this is Jerry Jones' show. It means you got five guys running right up your quarterback's nose. That's what it looks like. But this is Jerry Jones' show, so the boss gets his road-grading offensive guard, the 6'5", 321-pounder guard from Alabama, can be a force in amplifying their ground game, blah, 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 but passing up on wide receiver Matthew Golden and tight end Tyler Warren. Is once again going to leave Dak Prescott with an unstable I can't believe that Dallas passed that tight end. Although they have to replace Zach Martin, right? He retired?
Yeah.
And they're used to having a real stud in that spot.
Yeah, Zach Martin went like 3 years in a row without a holding penalty at one point.
And did what he was, was he 12 years in the Pro Bowl, all pro?
Something like that,
yeah. Something like that. And, good time for him to retire. He had a nice career. The kid in Indianapolis, he's still playing, right?
Yeah.
It's, well, I mean, you know, as much as this is kind of good.
Oh, the line vintage of that, and I'm also struggling on the Indianapolis name. It's escaping me, but you also had McGlinchey,
yeah.
Who was a first round pick, and you had Ronnie, what's his name? Just re-signed with Baltimore, Ronnie Stanley. You know, these guys were all very high first round picks. Those lines were really good. It's kind of awesome that Brian Kelly couldn't win bet more than he did with those guys.
Well, he was his own worst enemy, I think, in a lot of ways.
He was.
What is it about this whole thing, even though obviously, you know, we're fans and everything, what is it about this whole draft thing that just rubs me the wrong way? These zillions of people out there standing there, it's like we're picking prize steers, for God's sake. What other industry do you get to do this? I don't know. That's just part of my.
It's a weird experience. You know, I didn't watch it. I'm here for a. I'm here at a nerd fest, the Ivy Tech's IT summit. We everybody who works full time in IT, whether is here. Everybody who teaches from all over the state. And so we're all here hanging out, you know, nerding out on all kinds of stuff.
Oh, God. Well, you can't. What's the what was the computer expo? What was the one that used to be in Vegas? Probably still there. The big computer expo show. It was the total nerd fest that they used to have for a whole week every year. What the hell was the name of that thing? It was
It's either the computer expo or the nerd show. I'm not sure. Nerd expo.
Yeah, but I was playing blackjack. This is a long time ago. And I go, hey, when you got those guys, the computer show in here, and those guys, is that a good convention? She goes, let me put it to you this way. They bring one $20 bill and one shirt, and they don't bother to trade either, to change either. Okay, then. So, in other words,
people are changing clothes here. They were nice and clean yesterday. It's funny, Wednesday night, we show up and nothing had started yet. People were just checking in because we start early. You know, this is like an 8 o'clock start. I don't know what the hell kind of a seminar, you know, convention this is, because most of them start at 9 o'clock and let everybody sleep. But anyway, one of the guys, and God, I forget which campus he's from, but he comes walking in with his backpack, and I just looked at him and said, "Your backpack is clinking."
What, do you have beers in there?
No, yeah, it wasn't beer. It was hard liquor.
God,
we had some tequila. I had a couple margaritas.
Well, there you go. By the way, for those that maybe most of the people don't care, but my inside word from the people in the liquor industry is: what do you suppose the hottest booze is right now, Kevin?
Canadian Club?
No. well, it was the Browns for a long period of time, which the whiskeys are still in,
yeah.
But tequilas now are if you don't have 15 brands of tequila on your bar, you're not at the right bar now. I mean,
you're just not okay.
Yeah, tequilas are really in, and I'm kind of stunned at the. Maybe Ricky could do this for us. I'd love to get somebody on the show from this Yuengling. This beer, it's the oldest brewery in America, and they were all just Pennsylvania, and then they were in Ohio. Then I'm going to say, 10, 12 years ago, they went into Indiana, and they just kind of go state by state. Well, now they've entered Illinois maybe, 10, 12 weeks ago, maybe a little longer than that. But they are everywhere, Kevin. They have taken the state absolutely by storm. They are the official beer of the Cubs and, I think, the Bulls, no matter how much that cost them. They've pushed Bud Miller, they've pushed everybody right out of the way. And Miller is their distributor. And you know what interesting they have? When now everybody going to every place, there's a big, huge line of tap beers, right? Their tap, the thing that screws onto the top of the tap, the thing that advertises the beer, is huge. It's the tallest one of the run. And I was at, I went to get had dinner at Fox's last week, but she was the one with her cousin doing the hospice stuff and everything. So whatever she wanted to do, she was hungry. I said, hey, let's just run over to Fox's and grab a sandwich or something. Because she goes, well, I'll cook. I said, you're not cooking. You've been working all day. Come on. So we go over and I asked one of the ladies there, our buddies, of course. I said, how are you doing with this Yuengling? Because all of a sudden I see, the brands haven't changed in forever. And all of a sudden I see this Yuengling thing in the middle. She goes, we can't keep it in the place. Everybody loves it. It's all everybody's drinking.
What do you think of it?
I've had it. Well, it's an unfair question because the one time I had it, we were driving back from the Notre Dame game. It was one of the something I was doing with you. And I was driving back, and we pulled into this little great little bar in Rolling Prairie, Indiana, which is interesting. And we used to go in there all the time when Dr. J had his house up there. Anyway, so we go in and she goes, yeah, you gotta try this Yuengling. Well, it was a totally frosted mug and their cooler's right behind where the draft is, so it's ice cold. It was delicious. I thought it was great. I mean,
I think it's mediocre is my personal opinion. It sort of reminds me of Coors. If you remember when you couldn't get Coors in the Rockies, and it was a big deal when you finally could get your Coors shipped to you. It's okay, but is it really that good? And my answer would be no.
Well, I mean, I there's a lot of beers that aren't around now that I like. I used to like Stroh's. I mean, I was never at... Actually, we used to drink... Remember when Drury's was the South Bend beer? I thought Drury...
Yeah, I do.
You know, for me, here's my wacky view of it. I liked any kind of beer, almost any kind of beer, that came out of a keg. I never liked the stuff out of the bottle as much. It was much more carbonated, and it just didn't taste as good to me. So I like Drury's out of there. We used to get that at Samaris, remember? Anything out of the keg I thought was pretty good. Just saying.
Yeah, well.
I was never a fan of Budweiser. It had kind of a different taste to it. Never liked Bud that much. But
I still am not. I like a nice pale ale, and I'm fine with that. But I think there's better brews than Yuengling or many of the others that are widely available.
I thought Old Style out of the keg was great. But you know,
you're such a Chicagoan.
Well, you know, with the best one I ever tasted out of a keg, when we remember the happy hours used to have in the dorm room.
Yep,
Schlitz was a really a good beer. They changed the recipe and everybody just dumped them in like a week. Schlitz had a dark beer that they only marketed. Well, didn't even market. They only sold in half barrels, the 15.5 gallon one. You couldn't even get the small barrel. That stuff was delicious. We used to have, this is crazy stuff, I know. In a dorm room on a Friday night, we would have a happy hour.
Actually, it was Friday afternoon.
It was like 4 to 6. And we would get 3 15.5 gallon barrels of beer, 2 dark, 1 light, open the door at 4 o'clock. Of course, our buddy Tom Conway always had a taste before 4. But, we'd haul these things across campus. So, the guys that did the work, they deserved a beer. In a place, we 3 barrels of beer never lasted to 5:45 in a dorm room. That was, and everybody's going, how the hell did you do that in college? Well, things were different in those days. It was $1 to get in, which was plenty, and we had 3 barrels of beer. We had the garbage cans, and there was a place that I could go. Talk about doing this right, Kevin. There was an ice place where you could go get something called Coarse Crushed. You ever see that?
Yep.
It was crushed, but the thing of ice was about the size of your fist, just a chunk of ice. So when you put the keg in the garbage can and you poured these in there, it was like the exact same size. It stuck between the keg and the outside of the garbage can. So the entire keg was encased in ice instead of just sitting in it or something, or with some on top. And we'd do that for like an hour before, and I'll tell you what, it was good stuff. And, you know, we always got our permission from the university, and every one we'd have, what, four or five professors were there, right? Never any trouble. Your brother Tim did the music.
Yes, he did.
He and Dave Murphy did the music. And so I had my stereo in the other room. We moved the speakers into the room where the party was, and we had every Friday. I don't think you see anything like that anymore on campus, do you?
And I will tell you that, you know, there were many of us who you typically think of the college kids being up really, really late on a Friday night. But after 2 hours of emptying three kegs, many of us didn't make it much past 9 o'clock.
That is the truth. Hey, what do you make of, you know, it's so funny. We were talking yesterday with Andrew and Wayne. Is what we're seeing a lot now in government, how much have people been able to move? I mean, I talked with those guys. They actually were pretty informative. But what I'm talking, I'm struggling here the last few weeks as we start talking about people doing things that maybe in our day people thought you couldn't do. And somehow, Kevin, when people just ignore it and do it, I mean, all of a sudden it becomes, I don't think even people think it's wrong anymore, right? I don't know. Is it, or am I just being a Luddite? I mean, when I see a guy in Congress trading more than I do, when I do it for a living, I go, what the bleep? I mean, is it a part-time job? And then Andrew and Wayne say your first year in Congress, you don't do anything except vote the way they say you're going to vote. I mean, you don't even have a job. I mean, where is the truth in all this? I'm sure those guys are right. I don't know what a freshman representative does on either party, except if you, God help, if you vote the wrong way. Maybe you have time to trade all day. I don't know. maybe I could be a congressman and still do what I do. I mean, is our view of what the way things ought to be, does anybody even care about that now? I mean, I see what's going on in the White House, and to me, the guy's running five businesses. He's like a Mr. Haney and Green Acres. And yet, does anybody think that's even wrong other than me? I don't know. It just seems odd to me that the president isn't a full-time job, but evidently there's plenty of time for bitcoins and all the other thing going on in the place. And I mean, am I just out the pasture here or what?
Well, first of all, you know, the comment on Trump is he is and always has been an incredible multitasker. He's got a short attention span. And he's always got a lot of balls in the air, and that's, you know, that's been him for his whole life. So that's not really surprising, whether you like the ones he's juggling or not, he's got them. So you know, that's not surprising. But the in general, the people trading and all that, I think everybody's turned into some version of Irwin Mainway. And I don't know if you remember who Irwin Mainway.
Why do I know the name? You brought him up before.
Yeah, Irwin Mainway was a Saturday Night Live character played by Dan Aykroyd who made Dangerous Toys.
Yeah, okay.
And so the skits were really funny, but he would just bold-faced lie, you know, as somebody. I think Jane Curtin would always be interviewing him, and, you know, he always could just bold-faced lie and sit there and look right at you and go, it's educational. You know, bag of glass is educational. See, you get the light shines through it, and it's prism, you know, makes a prism. So bag of glass is an educational toy, not a dangerous toy. I think we have a lot of that syndrome where people are just able to look, you know, look straight into a camera or straight at somebody and say, oh, no, everything's fine.
I just, you know, it
ain't gaslighting anymore, because that requires a little bit of a deft touch. This is just bold-faced lying, and of course, you know, you deal in with a lot of media who's just not good at asking follow-up questions, or is not inclined to, or whatever. And we've talked about that before, and you know that goes back to when we had Cheryl Atkinson on the show.
Yeah.
She said they're not subject matter experts. They don't even know how. They don't even know what questions to ask. They're only trained to ask a question, listen, smile, and report.
Well, you know, another thing that it sort of frosts me in from the level, well, you know, nobody cares if something frosts me, but the when you talk about, you know, we have a couple of in our Notre Dame group that are convinced that, I mean, actually, there's a couple of guys that I know from the AAA are convinced all this NIL stuff, this amazing amount of money that's flying around, all this stuff, what do you mean it was going on back in the 50s? And I'm one of these guys that says, at some point, there's a level of degree where the whole subject changes. I mean, I'm going to say that my cousin who just turned 90, that was on a ride for, he played halfback and ran track at Colorado. He will tell you, if you ask him, he'll say, yeah, we all had a guy, and we had a kind of an open tab at the men's store in downtown, was that Boulder? He says, if you wanted to get a pair of blue jeans or whatever, you went out and you charged him. He said, but nobody went and bought five suits or anything like that. And plus the guy, I mean, you know, he might have got a few bucks here and there, but he also had to join ROTC so he could get through school. Because they paid him. You don't see any of these guys now doing that. You know, people will say that that's the same as NIL. And I'm thinking they're going, no, it's not. And same thing going on with the trading. I mean, if I mention anything about people front-running, the first two words out of every conservative, and you don't do this, mouth is, well, what about Pelosi? Make that three words. And I go, we're talking about on a different planet. There are people, I think, that seeing which way contracts are going and things like that and maneuvering various rules like Phil Graham did and with his wife on the board of Enron. I think probably he was an investor in Enron. I don't know that. I think she probably was. She's on the board. And they probably did very, very well for a while. Now, whether they knew to get out, you know, that I don't know. Did they get that piece of information? But what's going on in the last 3 weeks, Kevin, I'll put it on the table. I'll say, if you gave me $100,000 and you gave me the news 10 minutes before the last 2 weeks, if that account wasn't $2 million, you should fire me as your guy. That's how bizarre this has been in the last 2 months. I mean, and we're talking about 10% currency. We're way beyond Nancy Pelosi's league at this point. We're not even close. Maybe the one thing that's close to it is the lady who's the wife of the guy who owns the exchange or runs the exchanges coming out of the COVID meeting and selling all her stock or buying puts or whatever else she did. That's maybe close to it. But, I mean, if we went to stop the series last...
So you're really talking about scale. You're not talking about activity. You're talking about scale.
But, it, you know, I guess I could, you know, if I...
I think that's, you know, when you disagree with people talking about NIL, I mean, it's the same thing. We're talking about the scale. We're talking about who the influencers are, have they changed, all of that. So, yeah, there's a different dynamic to that, but it's, you know, it's still the same grift.
Well, but I mean, my cousin didn't go out for bid and move after his freshman year. He joined ROTC because he needed more dough.
There were rules against that at the time. Now those rules are gone, and that's contributory. See, everybody likes to blame NIL. I don't think that's what's necessarily to blame. I think the big thing that's to blame is the ability to transfer every single year without impunity. And, you know, whether you can make that, I don't think you can even make that go away if you wanted to. So, because it's court ordered now.
I think you can. Not on an NCAA basis, but I think on a conference basis you can. You can change the contract for the scholarship. NCAA can't demand it, but I think if the Big East has said, look, we're not going to do that. We're going to do it this way. You don't have to go to the Big East. You can go wherever you want. But I think if you want to go there, they can have a different deal, I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure the counterargument to that will be you can't be competitive.
Okay, but maybe you can.
That's fine. You can choose not to compete, and that's true of, you know, pretty much every business. If you don't like the terms, go find somebody who will give you the terms. Heck, I remember you know, I remember a bank in Chicago that did a whole bunch of bad commercial real estate deals because their reputation was, if you can't do your deal anywhere else, you know, if nobody else will take you, go there. They'll give you a loan.
But competition.
And of course, they got killed because of it, you know, ultimately in the when the commercial real estate market cratered in the late 80s.
But competition works both ways. I mean, it always has. And this is what, you know, if somebody has a gas station and somebody says, I'm going to sell it for less than the price of it costs me to buy it, you could go down that rat hole with him, or you can say, well, give him a month and he'll be right back up. You might find out that if the Big East did it, within 2 weeks the Mid-America Conference is doing it. I don't think you're going to see the SEC doing it, or ACC. You're going to find all these conferences that are essentially tired of getting poached are going to make the deal. And they said, we're just going to deal with the guy who's not already the star. We're just going to go that route. And somebody may do it. And it'd be interesting to see if they never get another ball player, which is possible, where everybody says, that makes sense, we're going to do it too. The competition works both ways, right?
Yeah, I would imagine, and maybe you will see that happen at some point, but I would imagine in the meantime, you got a lot of people hoping the NCAA can come up with some kind of way of doing it so that they don't have to be the first one. They don't have to be the one that sticks a neck out.
I think that the NCAA is right now a eunuch. They have nobody to bargain with. I don't think they can do anything like that.
Yeah, the only thing I can think that they can do that might pass muster in court is to force payment when you accept a transfer payment to. Yeah, I don't think you can do payment to the departing school, but I think you can. You can do payment to a fund that would compensate, and then that would be used to compensate. And the reason I say I don't think you can do it on a direct settlement basis is, how much do I pay for a prospect transferring from, from Oklahoma to Alabama versus how much do I pay for a prospect transferring from Ohio University to Alabama? At that point, you get these grades of it, and it's probably just easier if you want to set something up like that.
But why if it's...
First of all, what that would accomplish, and I don't think it's the total solution or anything, but the NCAA could try and do this. What it would accomplish is compensating people for developing players for the larger schools, and frankly, it would go the other way too. You know, when a guy tries to, he's not going to play at Alabama, and he wants to go to, Southern Mississippi or something like that. Some kind of compensation could go back the other way too. But that's the only kind of thing you can do it, because that's between the member schools, and it might affect player movement some, depending on the price tag. But that's about the only restraint. Otherwise, right now they can't do any restraints.
Well, the reason why they can't do any restraint now is because a scholarship is a renewable 1 year contract, correct? If it was a 2 year contract, you got to buy the contract, right?
Oh, yeah, you could do that, but the inability to transfer has been it's been adjudicated in court, and they're saying that affects the ability to make a living. If I can't go someplace where I can play,
I would
then I can't I can't realize my earning potential.
I'm not
that's the argument, whether you like it or not. That's the argument.
I'm saying that my point here is, I hope I'm not beating it up, my point is that's the argument when everybody's got a 1 year contract. And the schools that have, you know, I'll say something nice about our alma mater. I won't say the real schools, but the people. If you went to Notre Dame on a 4 year football ride, and you just weren't good enough, or you got hurt or something, they didn't, and you stayed in school for 4 years. They never took it away from you, even though they could have. It's a renewable 1 year deal, correct? But they didn't operate like that. Neither did Michigan. That's why there's always 30 guys on scholarship at Notre Dame or Michigan, unless they were good enough to really say, I want to go play somewhere else. But some guys didn't. We knew guys that were on scholarship that just went and played baseball. They didn't go to another school.
Well, I see it with basketball all the time. People want to finish up their degree first, and then I'll go. You know, I'll go if I still have eligibility after getting my degree.
But I'm saying if it was a four-year contract, like for a long time, the schools acted like it was. Most schools acted like it was, and most because even though legally it was a renewable one-year contract, when you got a scholarship to Notre Dame or Michigan or probably even Ohio State or Purdue, the implication was you're here for 4 years. You and I together on this deal, even though the contract didn't match what people's reality. Correct? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
I never saw Notre Dame just saying, "Well, you're not good enough. You didn't grow. Get the hell out of here after 1 year." Now, some schools did, but they didn't.
And or they wouldn't necessarily tell you that you had to leave, but you'd get pushed.
Yeah, you get pushed. So you had that going on. And I think if the contract actually read 4 years, and they were obligated to give you tuition and everything else for 4 years, and you wanted to go somewhere else, I think the somewhere else would have to, just like in baseball, it's like anything else. I have a question for you. This is maybe at the heart of all this stuff, because you and I...
Make it quick, because I got...
Oh, no, we're hoping... I mean, Carl's on, so he'll be a little power in the...
He is on, yep.
If you've talked about they're going to end up paying the players directly, and we talked about it yesterday with Bill Moriarty, you know, maybe Under Armour is just going to pay the school more money so the school can turn around and pay the players. Given the fact that these universities have buku cash, would you want the liability of a football team and, you know, possibly an injury that 20 years later gets traced back to football? Would you want that liability if you were on the board of Notre Dame or UCLA or Wisconsin? I don't think I would.
That's why they like the current setup. That's why they like calling them student athletes in an extracurricular activity. They don't have to deal with that notion because they're not employees. So workman's comp is not an issue. That's what they're doing. That doesn't... it doesn't mean they're not going to be able to.
What happens? And I don't know. It's almost like the tobacco thing. What happens when the first guy that plays at Wisconsin or Illinois or God knows where gets some, where they can't blame it on a high school or playing in a playground or his pro career or something? There's going to be a guy that didn't play high school ball, played 3 years at Wisconsin or Illinois or Indiana or some damn place, and then never played pro, never played in a touch league, didn't play hockey on the side, dies from CTE or blows himself up at age 45. And the school has, their appendage is just out. There's no way they can defend it, and the tab is, you know, $100 million or some crap. What happens to college football? There's going to be a case like that. I mean, I got to believe.
Yeah, there will. I keep saying they're going to, you know, somebody's going to get injured and sue them and claim that they are entitled to the damages and all that, and they're going to say, "I'm an employee now."
Yeah.
And you're saying that this idea that I'm getting paid at some kind of arm's length, it's a joke. It's just a shadow human resources department.
Well, when you...
Okay, I got to head downstairs, Tom.
Okay.
I
gotta
go.
I'll ask Carl the last question then.
All right.
Take care, Kevin. Have a nice time. Is he a leader or is he at the end of the bench at this convention? What do you think, Carl?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's out in Vegas, the one that we used to go to all the time was NetWorld Interop, which was out there. That was an interesting setup because it was held twice a year. Once it was always in Vegas, and the other time it was typically either Atlanta or Chicago. So when it was in Chicago, of course, this was, you know, when I was running my company, we usually had a booth and, you know, a hospitality suite and all the crazy money was spent. And the only reason I did it when it was in town was that we actually got a decent ROI on it. I was able to measure it, and it was worth it. But Vegas was, I mean, I don't know, the tables for the most part aren't my thing, but I do like the poker room. So,
you know, were you my mom used to play, but she was I'll use the term regular poker player. She was a 7-card stud, 5-card stud, draw poker. That room wasn't the Texas Hold'em room. Were you a Texas Hold'em guy, or I'll use the term old style poker?
I was more Texas Hold'em than, although 7-stud was also a game that I enjoyed. So
I don't like the games where I call them funny games where there's all ins and all the other stuff. I like a game with a regular limit that you actually can play for 2-3 hours and the best man usually wins.
Well,
I don't like that. Oh, all of a sudden the guy gets one good hand and I'm here for 2 hands. I'm here to play for a while.
Yeah, the thing with Texas Hold'em is that because you only have a couple of cards yourself, and most of them are community cards, the you know, actually reading the room, if you will, in terms of what's out, and therefore, you know, what potentially you are you're playing against, becomes much, much tougher. And it's you know, that's not so much the case with 7-stud, because by the time you get done with the hand, most of the deck is on the table.
Right.
Okay. That is not true with Texas Hold'em, and so as a result, you know, that uncertainty makes the game much more difficult mathematically to, you know, to calculate in your head as you're playing. It's really hard to, because you really don't know. And it's, you know, and people are like, well, you know, but I do. No, actually, you don't. I mean, the only thing that you do know is if you have the nuts hand, given the, you know, what's up at the flop, the odds of you being outdrawn are long. But of course, what that also means is that if somebody else has a crack at it, and they know they don't have the nuts hand, it is going to cost you all your chips.
Yeah, I like a game with a limit.
That's the thing, is it's, you know, that's the problem with it, is that if, you know, if you're in that situation, then one way or another, somebody usually is going to shove the stack at you, because that's you know, you're going to have to pay to get those cards. That's just that's just the way it is, and because they know that, you know, right now they've got you, but you got two more coming.
Well, I know my mom, you know, my mom was a really good poker player and a good bridge player, but when they'd go to Vegas, they'd stay downtown at the Four Queens, because my stepfather couldn't walk very well, and
I got you.
So you take the elevator down to the casino, and then there's the one more floor down is the breakfast room, you know, that kind of
right.
thing. And
oh, yeah.
So she'd scoot down in the morning early, and she says to me one day, she goes, my mom is pretty bright. She goes, I mean, I don't understand how people can be like so clueless. I go, why, what are you talking about? She goes, well, I get off the elevator and there's a poker game with you know, four people playing and an empty seat.
Yeah.
So I go sit down and somebody gets up. And she goes, it's obvious to everybody that the four people there are shills.
Right.
As soon as I sit down, she goes, I have no problem. I'm as good or better than the shills. I've made money playing against shills. They're all pretty good players. They're all very friendly. Especially the ladies are very nice to talk to. And since some other guy will come and sit down, this is the same guy 4 days in a row, sits down at the empty seat and somebody gets up.
Yeah.
Finally, after the fourth day, the guy says, he says to me, why every time I sit down does somebody get up? She says, they're shills. And he goes, what's a shill?
Oh my God.
What do you mean, what's a shill? I mean, my mom says, how could you be in Vegas playing poker and not know that?
And not know that that's, yeah.
But it wasn't. But she goes playing against those guys. The only problem is they're probably better players than the regular schlumps that will sit down. But they're not that much better. I mean, still, you can play.
No, it's some of the best. You know, I mean, if you're out there and, you know, you're at a convention or whatever, the time to go is, you know, is fairly late in the evening if you've still got your wits about you, because invariably somebody is going to sit down that's pounding the scotches.
Oh yeah.
And that was one of the reasons that I enjoyed it so much, was that invariably somebody would do precisely that, and when they did, well, you were going to make a lot of money, okay?
Well, this is sort of a period piece of the world for guys like Ricky. We used to go, and we'll start talking about the market here in a bit, but I have a couple of questions for you regarding the football stuff before we drop that well. We used to go, there was a, when back in the day, all the airlines were regulated, right? So every time you went somewhere, no matter what you did, you had to pay the price going from L.A. to Chicago. And then if you got to the airport and your plane was late, you could shift to another airline. It didn't matter. They were all the same price, blah, blah, blah. And that you couldn't get away from it. Well, when they tried to deregulate, the first thing they did was allow these what they call charter flights. So United could have a charter to Vegas and back to bring people there or where else you want to go, Florida and back. And but the deal was that if you paid for the charter and you didn't go, you couldn't get your money back.
So, I got you.
So say the charter was, they either went Thursday to Sunday or Friday to Monday, and the plane would fly out with the people going to Vegas, then they'd load up and fly back with the people coming back on a Thursday. So the stews loved it because it was 8 hours in the air in one day. So right. You say the highest end stewardesses or the highest seniority. And it was a riot. But you Ricky, check this out. You get to the airport with your bag. Well, first of all, if you canceled, there was an outfit that bought up the canceled time and could resell it. So when you dialed 1-800-SODA-POP, and there was this travel agent out on Harlem Avenue near the airport, you call them on a Monday and say, what do you got? And they say, well, we got two to Vegas from Thursday to Sunday, staying at like the Flamingo, like $150 for the nights and the airfare, right? And so we'd go, we'll take it. And we did that like all the time. You know, I mean, Caesars might have been an extra $20 and some crummy place might have been $20 less. Or, you know, if you want to stay like at the Westward Ho or somewhere, it might have been $99. But you get to the airport, you drop in your suitcase, you check in, there was no security. You'd walk right in, go right to the bar, even if it's the morning, and you'd get on the plane, you'd go to Vegas, you'd gamble for a while, go to dinner, you get to your room at 10 o'clock and your luggage is waiting for you. You never even had to pick it up at the airport. But so one day, we go at the last minute and I couldn't sit with the guy I was going with, so I'm sitting next to this guy who's the car insurance for auto dealers, like Workman's Comp and all the stuff on the lot and everything.
Yeah.
And he loved to play poker. He says, yeah, I'm staying downtown and, you know, the best room is the Binions and blah, blah, blah. And so I couldn't wait to talk to the guy on the way back. Because he said, yeah, my wife, all I do is play poker, so she doesn't want to come. Well, she got nothing to do. So on the way back, I go, how'd you do? And he pulls his wad out of his pocket. He goes, he must have had 50 hundos in there, maybe more. And which, you know, in those days, was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, I played 20 hours a day. And on Saturday night, sure enough, just like you said, these two idiots from Texas come in, schnackered. And he goes, it was like a 5-hour limit game. Because I won like a grand for these two idiots. Like 20 minutes, and they were idiots.
Oh, yeah. No, the best night I had out there was some Japanese dude sat down, and I mean, he was betting without even looking at his cards. Every time the girl comes by, he's, you know, he's tossing a $20 chip on the thing as a tip, and, you know, another scotch, and of course she's bringing as many as he wants with him doing that, right?
Yeah, but they weren't strong drinks. You could drink them all night and not be clobbered unless
he was doing them straight up.
Oh, all right, okay.
Oh no, he was schmammered before he even got there, and, you know, in every 2-3 minutes he's another rack.
Okay,
another rack. It's one of those deals, and I was like, okay, here we go. And I'm like, yeah, I was pretty tired, but I'm like, well, I'm not leaving this table until he's out of money.
Well, I have a football question, and I also have a kind of combined together. When I see this happening, like last night, the draft, and I can't, at my age, I can't push other stuff away from it. And it turns out if there is any long-term liability or health issues, I always... pops into my mind my long conversation one night, which was spectacular, by the way, with George Conner. Those who don't remember the name, he was played for Notre Dame, was a Heisman Trophy winner, and then he went on to play for the Bears. This is, you know, way back in the day, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and blah, blah, blah. And he says to me, Sam, how many surgeries do you think I've had after football? And I said, Mr. Conner, I can't hazard a guess. I think he said 25. He goes, not one of them paid for by the Bears or Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Now, when I see something like that, it's kind of run. And I wonder why. I mean, when my mom, she had ended up with lung cancer and a long story, but I lost a great person. We all did. But I remember talking to the doctor, the Pullman care, what do they call it? The chest guys or what? The pulmonary, whatever they call them?
Pulmonary, yeah.
Yeah. And this is back when they just were putting all the money together for mesothelioma.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I said to him, by the way, do you ever get anybody in here with a mesothelioma case? And he goes, oh, yeah, we got those, you know, a lot of people on the south side used to work, you know, plumbing and things like that, or a lot of asbestos around. I said, do you send that bill to the fund, or does Medicare just pay it? He goes, Medicare just pays it. And I go,
yeah.
And I go, why don't you gather up the mesothelioma ones, send it to Medicare, and say, make the damn claim? Because nobody does that. And I'm thinking, why? Why does the only person that doesn't get to make... I mean, if you lose a loved one to mesothelioma, it's a really bad thing. But if the person's over 65, the government's the one who paid the bill. Shouldn't they at least get the bill back?
Well, you know, this is the... yeah, this is part of the problem. And, you know, as I've pointed out, the biggest issue that we have today for most, you know, and it's not new. And this is one of the things that's so maddening to me, is that... And I think this is also one of the things that's playing into what you're seeing with the markets right now. And, you know, and as I pointed out in the thing I put up earlier this week, there's this huge false thing going around with the current administration that, you know, you look at last fiscal year, this fiscal year, you know, spending is way up, right? And as I pointed out, right after the right after the new fiscal started, before the election, there was a very clear attempt by the Biden administration to essentially buy the election by dumping credit into the system at an unbelievable rate. Now, you know, realistically, when you get down to it, this all stands in the halls of Congress, because Congress authorizes every penny that's spent. The executive cannot spend anything that Congress does not authorize.
Don't assume, this is the one thing you and I sometimes disagree on, don't assume that they only put money into the system if it's needed to be spent. You put money in the system if you want to boost the money supply anytime you want.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm saying is that when you get down to it, I'm not saying it needed to be spent. I'm saying that that Congress authorizes, through their appropriations bills or their CRs or whatever process they use, they authorize every single penny of it. And by the way, this is one of the things that now is starting to come back and bite the GOP to some extent, in that there are some losses starting to be starting to accrue here. Where, you know, the Trump administration has come in and said, okay, you know, this is clearly fraud. This is outside scope. And by the way, we're pulling the cash. And the people who had it pulled from them are suing and saying Congress appropriated that money. It's ours. Okay? And by the way... they not only did they appropriate it, they passed it under the CR after Trump was inaugurated. Oops, have a nice day. Now, there's been a couple of losses already on this, and there probably will be more, because everybody and their brother is going to go after this to the extent that they can. But, you know, the problem is that even though my argument is always that fraud vitiates everything, and it does, legally, the problem is that you have to prove it, all right? And so,
well, and fraud has to be fraud. It can't just be a program you don't like.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It has to be fraud.
Yeah.
Okay. But fraud vitiates everything, and always has, and that is a basic principle in the law. And so, you know, to the extent that you can actually prove that it is fraud, you should win. You know, we have all kinds of fun and games that go on that is in fact outside scope. I mean, you know, it's like I pointed out back years ago, long before, you know, current president was in there, I think it was 2015 was the year that this was done, or something like that, so close to 10 years ago, the Senate committee on the budget went through and took the as-spents, basically the MTS, and you know, drilled into it at a much more detailed level, because they have access to more than just the, you know, the summary sheet, okay, which is what we get every time, all right, which is, you know, all right, this much was spent on Medicare Part D, all right? Well, okay, who got it, right? You know, we don't have the actual check stubs. They can get the check stubs. And so they went through this and they found that something like 8% of the total spending that had been done that fiscal year was illegal. It was fraud because it was spent against expired programs. Now, a program that's expired and has not been renewed has an appropriation of zero. Right?
Yeah.
And yet there it was. And this is part of the thing that's gone on with, and this is deliberate, Chief. Within Congress, you have no desire to enforce this. Within Treasury, you have no memo lines, no tieback, no GL tieback line in the vouchers. And yet these payments are allowed through the system. And in many cases, they're actually against expired programs that have no appropriation. Okay. Now, that is fraud.
Okay,
period.
quick fact check, Mr. Carl. If you go at it from, as you know, you try to go at it from the spending side, which, by the way, is very legit. I don't ever argue with you on that. You go at it from the money side. Between September and November, all right, the money supply increased at an annual rate of 5.1.
Yep.
Which is too high.
Yep.
Okay, between November and December, it dropped just a little. And since...
Well, from November to December, it dropped because they were about to hit the debt ceiling.
But they also, there was still increase, but just not at the same rate.
Right, but that was the reason right. that
so
the acceleration
since,
went away.
Since Trump has been in office, the 2 months that I'm getting the numbers for, the exact save 5.1%.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is somebody somewhere, whoever the somebody is...
Getting the dough.
No, but I'm saying whoever the... You know, you lob it out there. I don't want to be like the other knuckleheads. I just say the rich people or somebody, the people who have gained from this, which means the owner of assets, the owner of stock markets, the owner of those sort of things, they are in complete charge now. And I don't give a crap who's the president, even though this guy blusters around. The guys went to him the other day and told him, hey, by the way, you're screwing everybody up. We don't have nothing on the shelves. And what did he say? He backed off everything. And then the market's up 4 days in a row. I mean, the point is, it's the exact same number as the Biden's last 2 months. The exact same.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I'm not arguing against that. It's, you know, facts are facts, right? The thing that I think is so interesting about all of this as it stands right now is that when you look at the MTS and you look at the actual spend, and this is something Tom McClellan pointed out as well, is that behind all of this advance in the insanity within the equity markets in particular, but in all markets generally, is the fact that this is just purely it's inflationary monetary and fiscal policy. Okay, and that's what it is. To the extent that gets interrupted to any extent whatsoever, the market tends to do poorly.
It's not income like you and I remember. You make $100, you put 20 in the bank, and you live right on 80. That's not the wealth building we're doing. We're seeing asset prices creep up. Then that's
they can disappear.
The other stuff can't disappear. Well, it did in 32 when they closed the banks, but
right.
The other stuff can't disappear.
That can't. Yeah.
But this can disappear.
Oh yeah, and well, I mean, one of the things that I don't understand. As things, Tesla just came out with their earnings, right? Okay, so here's a company that posted up 27, if I remember it correctly, it's 27 cents. It annualized out to about a dollar, right, in earnings. Has an operating margin of 2.5%. Now, that's a grocery store. Hey, when you get down to it, that's a grocery store.
Obviously, Carl, you're unclear on the concept. Elon's back, buddy. He's back.
Well,
he's not messing around with his Doge anymore. He's back, and we're going to be right on the growth pattern Monday morning.
Okay, and on a trailing basis.
Don't confuse me with numbers. Elon's back.
Yeah, okay, and it's selling at 200 times, you know, forward, right? What did I just say?
You're not supposed to look at that. Elon's back.
Okay, but you know, you were talking about things being, you know, ethereal and numbers on a page as opposed to cash in the bank, right?
Well,
guess what? And by the way, that's not the only place you see it. You see it everywhere else too. And then, and this is it. And the other problem that goes with this is that everybody loves the impact, even when it's blatantly illegal. The way it occurs is blatantly illegal, as long as the market goes up.
Without a doubt.
All right, so I mean, it's like, you know, one of the things that pisses me off to no end is that I don't care where you look, the model that has been adopted by different areas of business is all subscription-based, away from you actually owning and buying something.
But how,
okay?
But how do we sound when I say we? I've been very longer than we've ever been for our people. We've had, everybody's an individual that we trade for, so it's hard for me to make any kind of blanket statement. But the only thing I will say is, by and large, we've had our best quarter ever. In the metals and the other stuff, and this up and down is terrific for us. But again, having said that, but I probably had 7-8 calls 2 weeks ago about people wanting, you know, a more managed, more less volatile type strategies. After the last 3 days, nobody wants to call me back. Everything's okay again.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's just endemic in the thing, and you know. I'm half joking, half whatever, but Tesla could have come out and said, we're going to be out of business by the 4th of July. And the next statement is Elon's back. It wouldn't have mattered. It's still been up. People are believers in this crap. These guys are the popes of these companies. They're not, you're not buying Tesla, you're buying Elon. He's a genius. You're not buying, you're buying Jeff Bezos, you're buying whatever. It's insanity, I think, but that's, those are the cards we're being dealt. To get back to our card thing.
Oh no, no, you're right. And I mean, I just, Chief, I look at all of this, and I just, my, you know, at some point, the problem with all of this is that when you do not have the underpinning of actual operating earnings, okay. An actual operating business that is generating profits, then all of these numbers on a screen are great. But unless you reduce them to cash, they can disappear like a fart in church.
Without a doubt. I mean, well, look at
and the thing is that and you know you're already this little rumbling, all right. You take a look in other areas, all of a sudden somebody's looking at this saying, hey, you know what, 10% of that, you know, that $2 million that, you know, is in my portfolio is all of a sudden it's gone, right? Well, now it's, you know, now it's 1.8, it's not 2 anymore. And then, you know, then you have a rally like the last couple of days, you're like, oh, it's, you know, happy days are here again, everything's back, you'll go back to the bar, go, you know. Except that the reality of it is that behind every bit of this is a violation of a felony law in the United States.
That nobody knows about but you and me. Or nobody
and
cares
nobody
about
care.
It. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. I don't know that nobody knows, but I mean, like, you know, for example, you take like accounting software, right? Personal accounting software. There's, you know, there's 4 or 5 actual, you know, you can choose them kind of things. Intuit is obviously the one that everyone knows about, Quicken, but there's others. Microsoft Money, you know, there's several others, okay? All of these are now subscription-based, every last one. And every one of these companies, if you look at it, where, you know, their stock price is, it is from the lower left to the upper right, okay? And not a little.
Yeah.
I mean, Intuit, you know, you go back and you look at 2010, Intuit was, you know, was a $26 stock. It's trading at 600. All right. Now, if you've got every single business in a particular line of operation that has the exact same chart and has adopted the exact same policy, that is a prima facie antitrust violation. It is a 10-year in prison, pound you in
what,
the
what
butt.
What is, if you walked around...
Because here's the thing, Chief. At the point that I, you know, look, the one of the fundamental laws of business, all right, something that, you know, is one of the first things that's drilled into your head when you start studying this kind of thing, is when you get to the point that you have about a 10% operating margin, you got people that come and shoot at you.
If...
All right? And the reason is worth it.
We stopped for our Thursday night's kind of our... adult beverage night over at the series, and a couple guys were out of town, so it was a small group. And I was kind of looking around, and everybody, the crowd, it used to be all traders, but now it isn't. But it's people who, you know, work for firms down here, and, you know, law firms and a lot of the trading firms. And you look at the ages are 25 to 40, and there's people older and, you know, whatever. I was thinking to myself, if I went from table to table, knowing we were going to talk about this morning, and even asked people about Sherman Act and front-running these trades and stuff, would anybody, A, have any idea what I'm talking about, and B, would they care, or would they even think it was wrong?
They would not. They wouldn't care unless they're the one that gets it in the butt.
But they're not. I mean, does anybody?
But they're not, right?
I mean, does anybody think that in the last week, with the movements in the market, that somehow or another that this shift of away from tariffs? And oh, by the way, I like Powell. I don't hate him. Where we had this 10% move, 10% move in what 20 trading hours since
it's insane.
It's insane, and yet, what do you mean? It's up. I'm not as afraid as I was Monday morning. This is fine. Whatever they're doing is fine with me. Keep it going. Yep. But then you and I look at it and we go, wait a minute. The Treasury Secretary has a closed-door meeting talking about policy with investors of Chase, J.P.
Morgan.
Which,
by the way, is illegal.
Totally illegal. Well, now, that brings up another question. Is Reg FD, which you come you and bite me, you and me in the ass, Does that apply to a cabinet official? I think they think it doesn't.
Well, obviously they think it doesn't, or they wouldn't do it. But guess what? That dates to 2000.
Yeah, and now last night that Trump is forming this new Bitcoin or something, and he had all his big donors to the White House to talk about his new company. What the hell? Where's Harry Truman, for God's sake? He got to be spinning in his grave looking at this guy.
I am just, it's the thing that when you get down to it, though, Chief, and this is, people can say, well, I don't care because, the market's going back up and, our happy days are here again, da-da-da-da-da. Look, here's the problem with this. People on the younger end of the scale who you'd better hope don't completely, stick the middle finger up totally, right, because we all get older.
Yeah.
and somebody A has to pay taxes when we get older because we stop paying them other than on our investment gains. All right. And secondly, at some point, you might want one of them to wipe your ass.
Yeah.
All right. Now here's the basic problem. At this point, that cohort has said we ain't making no more children.
Oh yeah, I heard those numbers the other day. Hey, well, before you
here let me tell you.
Okay. Hey, before you went there, I want to talk about this, but since it's on the top of my knucklehead here, the conversation yesterday, I don't know if you were listening with Wayne and Andrew, I thought was interesting. I tried to get those guys, because they're in that, they're old line, whatever, press guys, for lack of a better thing. And where do you come out on the discussion? Because they weren't even agreeing with each other. Is it nobody wants to expose this stuff? Because the papers don't want them to, or is it just not sell? If somebody wrote a terrific article today about insider trading in the White House, and suppose they found out, I'm just assuming that since it's there, it's so in front of your face that somebody there is smart enough to say, hey, I can make a few bucks on this. I don't know that Trump might be coming out of the can and just blurting it out before anybody else even gets to see what he's saying, but I doubt that. If there was this huge expose. I mean, like Andrew was saying, I don't know that anybody'd even care. Maybe that's why they don't want you writing the articles. They don't sell. Nobody gives a crap.
There's something to that. I mean, it finally got some press. This whole thing with these people call them migrants, the illegal aliens, and the gang members in particular. All right. Oh, this guy, he didn't get due process of law. But yes, he did. He was ordered out of the country in 2019. Oh, by the way, that he had a deferment was expired. Well, there's this other guy that they grabbed that he was on deferred removal because of this. Okay, yeah, and then he got caught with a kilo of cocaine, which, by the way, voids his agreement because part of it is thou shalt not break more laws, right? And so, but the judge says, no. Okay, finally shows up in the news. It finally happens. You got this judge out in New Mexico, state judge, not a federal judge, gets caught with at least, well, one that is being, that is actually living in one of his family members' residences, and a bunch of others that are hanging around. By the way, they're shooting his guns, which, you know, is wildly illegal because you're an illegal immigrant in possession of a firearm. That's against the law. And he, the state Supreme Court finally comes after him. He resigns. They have a disciplinary proceeding going, and he agrees to a permanent lifetime ban on any judicial office for aid or profit of any kind, including by the way they went so far as to specify, by the way, this includes officiating weddings, which I thought was rather amusing.
Does that mean if he does, you're not really married?
Well, I guess, yeah, because it's not valid, right?
So somebody serves you divorce papers and you say, by the way, the preacher wasn't valid, we were never married, you get nothing?
I don't know. Good question, right?
I never thought about that. I have heard that Trump didn't put his hand on the Bible, so the oath didn't count.
Well,
I don't know if that works. But
so then late last night, it turns out that the FBI actually showed up and arrested both him and his wife. Well, now the problem is that, at least from what I can find so far, this is the charges are evidence tampering instead of 8 U.S.C. 1324, which, by the way, if one of these gangbangers has killed somebody inside the United States, that's a bye-bye. That's a life sentence. And Homan knows exactly what this law is because he was talking about it when he first got into office. Funny how there hasn't been a single 8 U.S.C. 1324 indictment. But at least these two guys got cuffed and stuffed, him and his wife. So, you know, it and that actually got some press. Surprise.
The idea, my concern.
But the insider trading, like none. Yeah.
But I mean, it's we seem to have a group of people, and they didn't start it, by the way, this particular group in office.
Yeah.
They didn't start it.
Of course they didn't start it.
But there's been this, I don't even know when it even did start. I think it might have started, I don't think this is. On the trading side, I seem to think it started with Cheney.
I don't know if he was the first, but he was one of the more notorious that basically just put the middle finger up and
I don't care what you guys think. Yeah. I was doing the show, I think. Was I doing the show with Dr. J? I don't know, but I thought, wait a minute, now, does that mean, and I've been asking this question of everybody, I mean, what were the rules that everybody, I think just about everybody, back in that era, if you were a congressman or someplace, you had your stuff in a blind trust. Now, my question, and nobody seems to be able to answer it, and maybe there is no answer, the fact that people did that, because I knew the guy here, what the hell is his name? I'll think of the Italian guy who was my rep for a long time. Those guys, they all had their money in blind trust, and they didn't have that much because you only made like 45 grand as a rep, and by the way, you needed two houses or you had to live in somebody's basement or something. Was it a convention? Was it a house rule? Was it not even a rule? It was just the way gentlemen conducted themselves. And how could all of a sudden somebody say, screw that, I'm not doing it, and no uprising against, I don't think it was ever a law. Obviously,
Chief, now wait a minute. See, here's the thing. It is, because it, and this is,
well, that's what I'm asking. I don't know.
Well, it, but it is in on it, and it's not, you know, it doesn't. Now you now have the so-called Stocks Act, okay, that was passed, right, which supposedly regulates this stuff. Of course, it's being wildly ignored. But that's there is, because, you know, the Exchange Act is pretty clear that inside baseball, if you will, material non-public information, you trade on it, it's against the law. It's a felony.
There's never been a definition of it, though. There's never
been
an act.
I get this, but you know what? there used to be a period of time in this country. I mean, you know, there was when the entire reason you have 15 United States Code, the whole reason it's there is because Standard Oil and a bunch of other companies decided that the easiest way to make money was to basically send Guido around to take care of anybody that got out of line. And oh, by the way, we're going to set the price for
it. Why is it always a Guido? It's not a Joe.
Well, maybe it's a Guido, maybe it's a Joe. Yeah, you know, a guy with a baseball bat, right?
You think and, one of the Italian places I go to, the guy's name is actually Guido.
Well, okay. I'm just saying, it's, you know, there's.
I don't know if I'd like that name, would you?
Well, yeah, probably not so much. But this was the outrage got to the point that Congress, you know, codifies this, right? And for a while, it kind of cooled it down. The problem is that if you do not aggressively maintain a law enforcement posture on any law, I don't care what it is, it's ignored. Because and you look at the situation we have today with H-1s, okay, in the United States. The abuses there, along with the CTF and the O-1s and the F-1s, and I mean the pipelining, which, by the way, it's illegal. Okay, it's not questionable. It's not shaving corners. It's against the law. And yet these are, I mean, you come in here on a student visa, you're not even supposed to spin pizzas.
But somehow people have not, what about the companies that bring a guy in for a certain price and the guy, you can't go down the road if they want to pay him more? Talk about it's indentured servitude of some kind.
Well, hello, yes, yeah. It is. And oh, by the way, that's prohibited by the Constitution, right?
But so, if you're big enough, if you're Google, you don't pay any attention to constitutions.
Okay, well, guess what? Disney didn't either when they fired their entire IT department, forced them to train all their Indian replacements.
Yeah, we don't.
Okay, that kind of an act is per se illegal.
Well, that was the. I'm going to lob this one out there before break because we missed the first break. The big where I finally got to yesterday with Wayne and Andrew is they were talking and they've got this history. I mean, those guys are older and they've been this Washington beat forever. Wayne was talking about Lyndon Johnson when he was a majority thing of the Senate was actually putting together stuff, you know, sort of like Trump is doing, like another. What was it, amusement park or something? He had his wife's name on it. I forget what he was saying. And you brought the guy bags of money.
Yeah.
And I said, you hit the nail right on the head of what I'm talking about. Lyndon Johnson, I'm no fan of, okay? But he at least knew that what he was doing was wrong, hence the bags of money and not a check and the other stuff. He was, I'm going to say, if I could define this properly, he was an immoral man, and he got. But he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he got around it by doing weird stuff like bringing him bags of money. Correct. Now, the thing I find different is my life has gone onward here. The people now, I can go online, and the trades these guys do are right in front of me. I mean, not the individual trades. I know the guy did 6,000 trades last year. He's not even ashamed of it. He knows the rule. I think, like you're talking about. Does that mean he's amoral? He doesn't even know that there is a rule? I mean, I think we've gone from immoral to amoral. Immoral's bad. I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as amoral. What rules? None of them apply to me. Screw that.
The problem with screw that, none of them apply to me. And oh, by the way, if I'm rich enough to be able to drive a Porsche, then you know, I'm in that group.
No right. Stop signs apply to me. No red lights. I got my Porsche.
No red light. No nothing. Oh, by the way, you know the hookers and the blow. That's all cool too. And the thing is that when you end up, you know, to some extent, I was talking about Tuesday. To some extent, part of the problem is that the personal interaction, which was a serious check and balance on this kind of stuff. I mean, if you tried something like this out in the Old West. You know, if you were lucky and didn't just get hanged, they'd say, get on your horse, get the F out of here.
And don't ever come back, yeah.
If you come back, okay, yeah. See that gallows over there? We're going to use it. And so, you know, so I mean, there was that was there. When you had physical trading floors, if somebody got a reputation for being a schmuck, you had a professional, you know, a professional thing that just wasn't tolerated. Okay, because and it could be enforced because people didn't have to trade with you.
You know who you absolutely agree with on that? I remember it from a day in class, Milton Friedman.
Yeah, but
somebody said, "What do you think of insider trading?" He said, "You're always chasing ghosts. Let the industry police itself. They will." But he also knew that it was all interpersonal trading. I think if you were to describe the trading today, you might have a different view.
Well, but this is the basic problem: is that as you get the face-to-face nature of things, all right, things that you would never attempt in your neighborhood pub, you'll do if your interaction with somebody is through a computer, because a guy can't reach through the screen and punch you in the nose. All right.
I'm going to lab this one, and then we go to break, and you can chew on it. A lot of what you just said, by the way, I agree with. Some of it is total BS, and I'll say that not because you're BSing us. We, being in the business that we're in, we get these audits all the time.
Yeah.
And we're about to have our three-year FINRA audit, which is, you know, whatever, I could talk about it, but I won't. They will go through, they will check what's under my chair, okay? Because it's us, because we're a smaller firm, and I don't know, right. They got nothing better to do or whatever. I guarantee you that these people, whoever they are, if they're putting in these front-running trades, if all of a sudden PTI had two congressmen trading through us, they'd be on us like white on rice.
But you're not Goldman.
I don't know who they're using, but I mean, if
well, but you get my point.
But I mean,
right?
if my brother Dan is the honest man that ever walked, got a call from somebody 2 months in a row right before the money supply came out or something, and he knew because we got to check people in Interpol, for God's sake.
Yeah.
If he knew the guy was a staffer in Washington and three trades in a row he just happened to be slightly timely 5 minutes to everybody else, I think he'd have a problem with it, and I have a hunch we'd get caught. But guess what? It would be our fault. Not his.
Right, it'd be your fault.
Be
not
our
his.
Fault. And so,
right.
How the hell these orders are going through someplace? And if you wanted to track them, you could track them easy. I doubt if they're calling a broker. They're probably doing it online. But even so, we get to see everything everybody does online here. And if every time you know the numbers come out for the labor stuff every month, I don't think I could even trade on that one. But if you knew the Fed speech, and every time we saw through our IB platform. I mean, people trade on their own self through there, but we see it.
Right.
If all of a sudden, wow, here's a thousand lot of puts, and it looks like we just dropped. Who the hell is this guy? We better go back and figure out who the hell is it. Oh, gee, it looks like Trump's chief of staff. I'm going to say I'm not going to jail for that, but. You know, we would probably flag it or dump them. We don't want any part of that.
Well, you know what, Chief, think about this. You know, right before 9/11, somebody did buy a crap ton of planes.
Without a doubt. And United Airlines and a bunch of those places, yeah.
And you know what? Nobody, who are the names of the people that did that?
I actually, could you do me a favor? Let's do this after break, because my buddy Dr. J was intimately involved in that. It's been so long ago now, I probably can talk about it. SP Futures down 6, NASDAQ Futures down 40. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, don't fake Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP futures down 7, NASDAQ futures down 45. They were down more than that earlier, but it seems to me that the market's kind of an uptick move here. We've had, you know, after we answer the other question with Carl, we're talking about this movement of the currencies, the movement of currencies and the bonds. Again, I can't overemphasize, and when Carl comes back on, he'll help, I think, overemphasize the amount of money that is involved in the bond market and the currency market. It makes the stock market look like kid stuff. 10% move in a currency, I don't know, we'll get Carl's opinion, I'm saying that's a 45% move in the currency in the stock market, but that should be my guess. Dow futures down 148, individual stocks in the Dow. What do we got? Nothing crazy here. We got Caterpillar down 2.25, American Express down $1.30, Triple M down 95, so nothing crazy. Goldman Sachs down $5. Over in Europe, we've got the... These guys are catching up a little bit from yesterday. Where's my computer? I got so much stuff up here. DAX up 164.7%. FTSE only up 16.2%. CAC around up 40.5%. We're in Asia. We've got the Nikkei. Possible thaw in U.S.-China trade war. Okay, Nikkei up 666. That's almost 2%. Hang Seng up 70.3. This Nikkei's been all over the place. Shanghai has been remarkably stable. Now it's down 2 points. It's really been like unchanged. I don't know how many times in the last 2 weeks. Bonds down 3 basis points, 4.27. The 30-year was 4.99 on like Monday morning, and now it's 4.72. It's a big move in 3 days. That's what we're doing these days. Oil's down 82 cents, 61.97. Just not a factor anywhere. Gold is gold's actually made a rally back up yesterday, but now it's down today because Chinese were allegedly accumulating a lot of gold, and now that they think that all of a sudden everything we all be nice buddies again, gold is going the other way. What do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 49 degrees right now with a high of 53. Cloudy and cooler with a passing shower or two. It's going to be windy this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy and windy with a low of 43 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 68 right now with a high of 93. A lot of sunshine and very warm. Tonight will be clear with a low of 61 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Montrose, 27 minutes. We're looking at 47 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 34 minutes. Iman Den Ryan from 95th, 20 minutes. Inbound Stevenson from 24 to the Den Ryan, 42 minutes. NBA playoffs first round is in session right now. We're on game 3. Yesterday we got the Knicks beating Pistons 118 to 116. Thunder beat Grizzlies 114 to 108. And Clippers beat Nuggets 117 to 83. Today we got Celtics at Magic 6 p.m. Pacers at Bucks 7 p.m. and Lakers at Timberwolves 8:30 p.m. For the NHL, Capitals at Canadiens today, 6 p.m., Hurricanes at Devils at 7 p.m., and lastly, Kings at Oilers at 9 p.m. Let's talk about the MLB. Yesterday, the Sox won. Sox beat Twins 3-0, and Diamondbacks lose to Rays 7-4. Today, we got Phillies at Cubs at 1:20 p.m., Braves at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m., lastly, Sox at Athletics 9:05 p.m. Back over to you guys.
Actually, a quick story on this, Carl. It's been a while. 9/11 there. There always were people, and I forget the name of the... Somebody came out, and I used their system forever until finally... And they loved me, just for doing the show. I mean, I really loved the system. For option education, it was the best quote system on earth, I thought. And when I say that, one thing, like we use interactives now, or we use other people's, it was the only system I ever saw where you could move the variables on a static page and see what actually, when stuff moves. So you actually can educate yourself using their system. And I don't know of any system now that allows you to do that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you kick up, like I'm looking at the GDX page, well, we're not trading, but if we were, the thing would be live. All the prices would be moving around.
Right.
But they had a page where you could, instead of GDX essentially live, you could go to GDX and it would freeze everything on there. Now, you got to be careful if the thing wasn't moving too much. But you had your theoretical value of your option. I could move my volatility from 16 to 20 and see what it did to the option.
Right.
Or I could raise the interest rate, or I could shove time out 2 months and see how much the time decay was. Incredibly education. There's none of that now. I mean, and those kinds of, even if you have clients or people that call that allegedly know stuff, they don't, because you can't do this. I mean, the nuts and bolts of what the stuff is, they take one number and just run with it. But anyway, right. So, and this particular company also had a way where you could you could program it, for lack of a better term, because what you use their system programming, I don't know what you call that, but the internal keys to the system, you could like do stuff where point me in the direction of the stacks that had an option trade that was bigger than a three times the standard deviation of the option trade. So if you had a, I'm looking at Federal Express. Okay, Federal Express does on average 3,000 options a day or something. Well, if Federal Express has a day where it's over six, I want to know about it, and it would do that for you. But it was not, you never could really know which direction people were. I mean, we used to do this for big firms in the day, where somebody might buy 20,000 shares of American Express or 200,000 and sell 2,000 calls or something. Okay, it's a big outlier in a call, but what does it do for you? It's a covered right. It's a little bullish, but it's a long-term kind of position. You could never tell if somebody really had an axe to grind, whether they're trying to buy puts or sell calls or do something. So what Jan did is, through other people, he got a much better feed, and he was able to tell whether the options that traded were on like the offer, which meaning, so if a market, I'll go back to my old days, if the market's 8/3, and all of a sudden the 2,000 contracts traded at 3/8, that person probably wanted to get long. Or if he did a covered right, maybe it trades in the middle. The volume's there, but it doesn't tell you anything, right? So what Jan did is figured out to these other guys whether or not. Now, it wasn't always that way. I mean, the guy could have been doing something else. He might have sold his stock and bought the option, in which case, right. He might have sold 100 Delta and bought 50, in which case he actually got shorter, even though it looks. So it didn't work in every case. And I was privy to this feed for several years, but now everybody's sort of got something like that. But anyway, he was the only one that had it before 9/11. And he was on CNBC one day, and he goes, by the way, there were all kinds of unusual put trades in United Airlines, American Airlines, and there was a list of them. And I think it might have been American Express with a hotel in it. I mean, there was more than just one.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a bunch.
And all of a sudden, this gets, somebody's listening, and they start calling him. And he was in the office here. And it's the SEC. Hey, how do you know this stuff? How do you know this stuff? And Jan didn't know as much about the brokerage industry, and he goes, all right, hey, Chief, how does this work? I said, Jan, first of all, they had to call somebody. I don't know if that much was online back then. Somebody had to put these trades through, and if you do, you know exactly who did it. You know where the money came from, because if they had to bring money in from somewhere else, you know Carl wired it in from First National Bank of God knows where, Tennessee. You could trace this thing anywhere it goes, because then it goes to OCC, and every OCC knew what firm it came from, which clearing firm. If it was us, it would have been, at the time, probably Mesro.
And they got the ticket number on it, so they know whose it is.
Yeah, it was Mesro's, it was PTI's customer, and by the way, it's Carl Dellinger. This is not, now granted, if it fled over to Europe and maybe came from an account thing over there, and it might have been a trust or something, it might be a little hazier, but it's not like you can never track it. So the SEC's calling Jan going, hey, how do you guys get this information? I'm going, okay, they don't want to find it, right? They're not acting like they want to find it, because that's not the questions we would ask. You'd say,
right,
well, what time did it happen? Who was it? What would you notice? And then you'd go right to time and sales, and it would say Merrill Lynch was on the buy, or PTI was on the buy, or somebody. Then you call them up and say, who the hell was this guy? And you don't call them and ask them. You say, by the way, you better tell me right now, because we're going to have the marshals there in a second, and they can tell you right away. And if it went to Europe, there's a Merrill Lynch office in Europe. I mean, there's right. Now maybe, you could have so many different layers to this, it might be hard to find somebody, but you're going to find out where the money came from. It's going to come from somebody's account somewhere. This is not that hard,
That was my point when this first showed up, right? Is that, excuse me?
I'm just happy we weren't the firm. I'd feel awful.
Well, the thing is that, but the thing, when you think about how far back all that stuff goes, all right? I mean, it's the kerfluffle that I got the, I got CME bent out of shape at me a number of years ago, and ended up actually being asked by the government to come and explain it to some of their people that didn't understand what I was doing. I did a YouTube video over the July 4th holiday. E-minis were open. I'm watching a movie. I've got my laptop sitting on the couch next to me, okay, with Thinkorswim going. And you know, they if you're trading futures, they've got the bid offer stack there, okay, along with, you know, along with where the cross is, right? And all of a sudden I'm seeing this 200 lot appears on one side. It's 3-4 ticks off the market and it disappears. It comes back, it disappears. It comes back. Not one of these trades actually executes. Okay? So I mean, it's a violation of the Exchange Act to put it in an order that you don't intend to have go.
Yeah, but it's a fake order. It's, yeah, you don't
want to. But if you're spoofing orders, that's, you know, you're trying to basically lead the market somewhere. That's illegal. Okay? And most of the time, it's kind of hard to detect. Well, on a holiday weekend, when there's, you know, there's no depth in the stack at all, it's not hard to detect at all. You can see right there on a retail screen, right? So I start the screen capture up, and I do this, and I put this video up, and my commentary on it was, where in the hell is the CME? Where the hell are the compliance people? Why isn't there a black SUV out in front of whoever's?
Because the whoever might be sitting on the board.
Well, I'm just saying, all right, somebody is pulling some BS here. This is clearly a violation of the rules, never mind the law. What the F is going on here? Well, I get a phone call from these guys on Monday, and they're all bent out of shape that I didn't call them. And I said, what do you mean I didn't call you? Why the hell should I call you when it's your effing exchange?
You know, you're telling me. Why should you call me? It's your job to remind me to do my job.
Yeah, I mean, are you serious? You guys are the ones that actually have this stuff up on your... You have operations people, right? I mean, you're open, you're working. I'm like, get out of here. So, yeah, and as it turned out, this was the guy, they finally, you know, the government actually got involved and ran it down. It was a dude in England.
Well, the little known, and boy, talk about covered up, is... The big thing that started this whole mess in Israel, the big raid,
yeah,
where they took all the hostages,
yeah.
Allegedly, there was a boatload of puts bought on the Israeli stock exchange 2 days before, a day before that happened.
Well, yeah, and see, Chief, the thing is that this kind of, you know, the problem I have with like the whole idea, well, you know, who's got the inside baseball on the, you know, on the tariff stuff, which, by the way, I think is probably just. Judging from Trump's style in the way he does things.
You know, Carol, if he's talking to one of his bozos, is talking to one of the bozos in China, it could be coming from China.
Well, it could be.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I suspect it's a load of BS. That in the bottom line is that neither of these guys' egos is going to let them settle anything in a reasonable fashion. Okay, and this is going to continue to escalate. I don't think it's actually being solved. And I don't think it has been solved. And I think people that are, you know, that are taking the bet that it has and are trading on that, you guys are going to be sorry. You're not going to like where this ends up, because this is, I'm just reading this from a psychology standpoint. I'm not, you know, I don't have anything else. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, you have just within the last, last couple weeks, you now have some people that are actually getting busted within defense-related areas, excuse me, that for years, when Biden was in office, when Trump was in office the first time, when Obama was in office, you know, this has been going on for a long time. You've got all of a sudden this information that's not supposed to get out, it ends up in the press somewhere, okay, whatever it is. I've worked on stuff in the past for people that you can't talk about, all right? And these are not suggestions. These are serious federal laws that bear on this kind
of thing. But they're serious to you. It doesn't appear to be serious to other people right now. That's
well,
a problem.
Point being, when I used to do this kind of thing, you know, if I wanted to take a leak, I had to tell the computer to dismount the disk, because this was back in the time when, you know, disks were packs that you took out of washing machine sized devices. Lock that sucker in the safe with both a key and a combination, go take the piss, go, you know, come back, put it in, and had to have a window in the room that my office was in that allowed me to see through the computer room window so I could see the safe and the drive. So if somebody tried to go in there, now that, you know, the amusing part of this was that when it was actually in service, you couldn't open that device. it was physically locked. The mechanism was designed, because if you did, when it was running, it would explode. So, there, you know, it was physically interlocked, so it wasn't possible. But nonetheless, the rules are the rules, right? You have to be able to see it. And if you can't physically see it, then it has to be in the safe. And this is serious stuff, right? And then all of a sudden, out of the middle of nowhere, you know, there's three, four people that think that because they disagree with some policy decision that the government has made, whether it's a Democrat administration, Republican administration, it doesn't matter. Because they disagree with this, that means they have the right to violate the secrecy of these deliberations and hand them over to the New York Times.
Well, some of this stuff is the issue. A lot of issues with all these administrations, but with this one, it's almost like if you were the groundskeeper, you'd sort of know. The inside information is not even. I mean, if you look at we come up with this policy now. The guy's first term, and he hasn't changed that much. He graded himself by the stock market. Or he comes out with this policy. He thinks all these people are going to fall into line immediately because that's his bravado.
Which is crazy, but yes.
So and all of a sudden, he blows this stuff out there with the anticipation, I think maybe in his own mind, that they're going to come crawling on hands and knees, kiss his ass, and cut a deal. Every one of these countries. And they can't wait to land.
And that's crazy.
But it sort of didn't happen. So the other day, the Treasury gets this group in the middle, the Secretary of the Treasury, and I don't think he's a dummy at all. And he says, well, it looks to me, basically, now he shouldn't have been in a closed room like that. Shouldn't have been this Reg FD we talked about earlier.
Right.
Basically said, this whatever tete-a-tete we got going with China is non-sustainable. No way we can do this. We get too much stuff from them. They get too much stuff from us. Somehow there's got to be a thaw here, basically, which after the meeting, people said, well, there's not going to be any, you know, a lot of people, there's not going to be any thaw. It was just him talking. Well, sure enough, the next day, it appears, that is what I'm reading, and, you know, I don't know if I look at one side or the other. He's trying to get the facts on this, if you can. And then all of a sudden, the people from, you know, a lot of his contributors, not to mention their stocks, are going in the crapo. You know, we're talking about NVIDIA's trading like 90-something, Apple's well under 200. These people somehow contact him and say, what are you doing? There's not going to be anything on the shelves anywhere. We're not going to be able to buy anything. The market's in the crapo. You're going to put everybody in a recession, and you think you're not going to take the blame, but you are. And sure enough, the next day, well, wait a minute. I'm not going to fire. Well, then he says he's going to fire the.
Even more stupid.
So all of a sudden, the next day, this all turns around. Okay, right. Now, which I guess was somewhat predictable because the response he was getting, and maybe if you just were somebody that said he's not going to put up with the market going down this much, he's going to change something, which he did. The weather, it just, and now all of a sudden, 2 days later, the people from the auto companies are saying, hey, you know, 200 of the parts in every car come from China. There's no other place to source them today. Now, maybe there will be. We can't put cars off the end of the assembly line unless you do something. Now, all of a sudden, 2 days later, well, now we're gonna let the auto parts come in from China. If you're the guy just mowing the lawn at the White House, you see these people coming and going, you could probably trade this. Maybe they should just put the visitors list on a line or something.
By the way, that is supposed to be public.
It might be. I'm not saying I look forward
well,
to
I
mean, it.
No, yeah. Well, this is one of the problems that I had with what was going on during Biden's administration is that log is supposed to be a public record, and yet during Biden's administration, 90% of it was not.
How can they pull that off?
Because Chief, it's everywhere. This is, you know, that's the thing. People
even in Clinton's administration, you knew when Monica checked in and checked out.
But this is the problem with the blatant and outrageous level of criminality that goes on these days is that nobody pays any attention.
You're not breaking the law, Carl, if you're above the law. How many times am I going to tell you that?
Well, all right. You want to know? You know where that goes, though, right?
I know where it goes, and I don't like where it's heading.
Well, where it's heading is it ain't illegal for me to go kill the guy that pisses me off.
Well, if somebody shows up late for work, which ain't all right, and all of a sudden you ream him a new one, as they used to say at Pullman, you better make sure you're not late for like a real long time because guess what? If you're going to do that to somebody, you better be perfect, Pharaoh.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this is one of the things, you know, everybody is like, oh, you know, it's all fine. The market goes, you know, we just ignore this law, we ignore that law. Look at the medical system, you know, all the rampant, ridiculous violations of, you know, 15 USC Chapter 1 that are there and everything else. And it's like, you know, you can say, well, gee, I own UNH. I love what that's done. I own Aetna. I love what it's done, right? Those stocks have skyrocketed. They stole the money, Chief.
Sure they did.
Okay, now, you know, you look
now
at...
Now stealing, entitlement, well, in the eye of the beholder, buddy.
Well, and you look at things like Tesla, okay? Now that the subsidies, the tax farming that the guy has done for the last 15 years has basically gone away on him in, you know, in America, right? The credits, the bypass, yeah. You know, the trade-offs. Oh, you know, Chevy has to sell you, you know, basically you buy a Chevy, you pay Elon $200 or $2,000 or whatever it is for that truck, even though you didn't buy one of his trucks.
Right, oh yeah.
Okay, because, you know, GM has to buy that carbon credit from somewhere, right? Because their truck doesn't get good enough fuel.
I'm going to say that the first...
This kind of stuff...
If you took away the carbon credits, would he ever have made any money or just recently?
No, and you know what? And here's the thing. Now that they're basically gone from his car business, from Tesla, okay, he's a grocery store. He's got a 2% operating margin.
I have a... When you talk about, see, the weird part is not the weird part. You bring up these issues and you have more detail on the laws and stuff than anybody I've ever talked to, and that's why I love hearing about it, to be honest with you. But this is it's rampant. I mean, look at the little stuff. I'm looking at, I just happened to be checking out Amazon here because some clients are positioned there. All I think of is, for how many years these guys, people were in Amazon, you walked into the Best Buy, you looked at TV, you went online, you bought it out of state, you didn't pay any taxes.
Well, it was sales tax arbitrage, was their entire scheme.
And here we are today, we have two administrations that have really pushed the electric cars, meaning Obama and Biden. Yeah. Some Republicans are for it too, a lot of people are really into this. You have a whole state of California into it. And here I am, just a dummy on a block from the south side, and I'm sitting there going, every time I put gas in my pick-me-up, I sit there and go, who decided that nobody in an electric car has to pay road use taxes?
Well, now Tennessee, by the way, killed that, and the howling was unbelievable.
Well, how do they do it?
You want to register one?
No, I'm saying, I mean, if...
Oh, no.
If I'm doing the math... If you've got in Illinois the taxes on your gasoline,
right?
By the time the federal's 12 and a quarter. I added this up once. It's pushing 90 cents. Maybe, let's say it is 90 cents. So the average person drives, let's say, 20,000 miles a year. If you get 20 miles at a gallon, what are you into? You're talking about 1,000 gallons of gas, correct?
Yeah.
So you're spending
$900
on road use taxes.
Yeah.
Now how do we get the $900? By the way, electric cars are heavier. So,
by the way, what they did was they tacked a nice fat surcharge on the registration fees.
Okay, but they haven't done anything like that in Illinois, and
they did here, and the howling was unbelievable. And
federal government hasn't done it. What do they get? 12.5 cents, right?
Well, the total I think on average is like 53 cents or something like that.
That's in Tennessee.
But it depends on where you are. Yeah, I mean and here's the other thing. That, you know, that really it used to be that Illinois or Indiana was one of the cheapest places to get fuel, okay, because they had a very low state level tax on gasoline.
But they charge an arm and a leg for your sticker.
Well, their tags, yeah, the tags are expensive. So, you know, I mean, there's a trade-off with everything, right? Well, during COVID, because no one was going anywhere and the crack on fuel can only be adjusted to a fairly small amount.
Right.
Okay, so you have this glut of gasoline because trucks still have to run, otherwise you're not going to have any food. But with everything closed down, there's no cars on the road. All right, I mean, it was, you know, I moved during the middle of this up here into Tennessee.
You know, our buddy Greg was on Monday and Thursday.
Chief, it was the first time
he does the crack spread. That's what he trades.
It's the first time that I've ever gone through Chattanooga where I didn't actually have to slow down. That infamous 2475 interchange is always a mess. Well, guess what? I blew through there at the legal limit with the trailer on the back.
You blew through there like dinner from a goose.
Yeah, and it was beautiful, and it's the only time in my entire driving career I've ever actually made that trip more than once and not had to sit in traffic for 20 minutes. But the thing is, and by the way, I didn't mind the fact that I got 9 miles a gallon when it was $1 a gallon to fill the truck up. But the thing is, all these states did was they looked at this and said, oh, well, this is a great opportunity to double the state gas tax. So they did. So now all of a sudden, Indiana, if I go through Indiana, I now try to avoid buying fuel there.
Yeah, they double it. But I mean, I still, whenever I see a pothole in the street, is that pothole there because the electric guys didn't pay their share or what?
Probably. And you know what?
Carl, we'll talk more on Tuesday, but every it's almost like, what's the word? It's the same subject. Every topic we talk about, it's the same subject.
I know, and the thing is, the problem with all of this, though, is that when you do this kind of thing on a systemic basis and you end up stretching valuations, you are making the assumption, and that's what you end up doing with it, okay? I mean, you look at what Tesla sells at right now.
Total tax in Illinois, including the federal tax, is now 85.5 cents.
There you go.
Now what you might know, but the listeners... Somehow or another, unlike anywhere else, I won't say in the world or the universe, in Illinois you have to pay sales tax on the other tax.
On that, right.
On the tax, which is insanity. So if you put 10 or 11% on that, you are up to the 96 cents I was talking about.
Right. Well, Tennessee's gas tax, I think, is 27 point something. So it's and there's a gasoline tax and then a particular fee that's specific to petroleum, which is kind of weird too. They have if you go buy a jug of oil, they've got a fee that there's a special sales tax that because it's a petroleum product.
All right. Well, last question: how is it,
sir,
if the tax is that high? I guess here is about $3.09 again. $3.09 if you go cheap on the city, it's $4.
Right.
But in the burbs, you can get. Let's say 320.
Well, we're 250-ish around here right now.
All right, which makes my question even more. If the tax is 90 cents, let's say it's 320, our Bob is 208. Right. How's anybody making any money?
Well,
you got to get it here, don't you?
Well, yeah, but transportation is obviously part of it too, because the further away you are from a refinery.
But I'm saying our Bob, New York Harbor, is 209.
Oh no, I know. I watch RB all the time, and I tell people, look, whatever you're paying beyond that is, some of that is distribution, but most of it's tax.
Oh, and it's the gas station guy gets a little bit. You think he gets a piece?
There's a profit in there too. Yeah, I mean, there has to be something to be made, but yeah.
I'm saying that spread is there's not much there for anybody right now.
No, there really isn't right now, and it's. But this is what I see in the internals. This stuff is that it's cracking, and the reason it's cracking across the economy is because you can only push things like this too far, and they snap back.
Well, in the last 8 weeks, oil's gone from 72 to 62, and our Bob's gone from 201 to 209.
Yeah, well, part of that is because you've got the changeover for summer blend.
I don't think our Bob has anything to do with that. That's what they have to do with the. That's what they do here at the Joliet and the Indiana blend. I'm not
but
so
it,
sure that.
Well,
that
it's a, no. There's a supply. There's a supply dislocation that happens though when that changeover goes on.
Okay, I get it. Right, what do you got going this weekend? Anything good?
It's temporary. I'm sorry.
What do you got going this weekend? Anything good?
Probably not so much. There was a race that I was thinking about doing, but it's the weather forecast is kind of crappy. It's been like, I mean, it's great for the grass, and of course it's going to suck when I have to mow it, every three days in another week. But it's just kind of rainy and nasty here lately.
Might catch a break. Look like it's nice here today. Anyway, buddy, talk to you on Tuesday. Have a good weekend. Ricky, nice job. SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ Futures down 72. Who knows if we're actually going to stay down today here or not. We're close enough where we could be up in a second. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.